wolves? They do nothing but consume food and breed. If you feed that thing more than the smallest morsel, in a few hours you'll have 10 tribbles, then 100, then 1,000.
Calm down.
They were once considered mortal enemies of the Klingon Empire.
This? A mortal enemy of the Empire?
They were an ecological menace, a plague to be wiped out.
Wiped out? What are you saying?
Hundreds of warriors were sent to track them down throughout the galaxy. An armada obliterated the Tribble homeworld. By the end of the 23rd century, they had been eradicated.
Another glorious chapter of Klingon history. Tell me, did they still sing songs of the great Tribble hunt?
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, gobbling as much grain as I can find.
I thought you were just going to be like, that's pretty good. Wow, Tyler. Tyler the Tribble Orton.
Yeah, that's what they called me in junior high.
I'm impressed. So this week's conundrum, tracing the Tribble Trilogy.
Say that five times fast, Cam.
Tracing the Tribble Trilogy.
Okay, I came up with that episode title and I could not name that say that five times fast myself. I don't even know if I could say it once. I'll give it a shot. Tracing the Tribble Trilogy.
I'm still impressed in your Tribble impression.
Well,
that's something.
You know what?
Are you going to do that on stage at Vegas next summer?
Yeah, 40 minutes.
That would be pretty astonishing.
Yeah. That's okay. One word.
So, Tribbles are something we've talked on the show before about the trouble with Tribbles and trials and tribulations. But I don't think we've ever really delved into the mythology of Tribbles.
Yeah.
We've never really talked about why do people love the Tribbles so much.
And we should also explain the trilogy aspect. Of course, we're talking about the original series episode, the Deep Space Nine episode, and the animated series episode, More Tribbles?
That's it, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which, Cam, you and I, we've debated before, is the animated series canon?
Yes.
It's not?
Well, it's interesting, because I actually read an article about this, and they said that Roddenberry said, you know, I think 15 years ago, he said, it's not canon, except for the episode yesteryear.
Well, Roddenberry was speaking from the grave at this point, Cam?
Well, it was while he was still alive. So probably, I guess, TNG. Or, I guess, early season TNG.
25 years ago?
Yeah, I guess that long ago.
Right.
So he just said that just the episode yesteryear that features the young Spock is canon. And then in 1999, the Star Trek Encyclopedia stated the animated series not canon. But then in 2007, StarTrek.com entered animated series into canon. And now that they've released it as sort of the box set of the original series, included the animated, there's a lot of talk among fans about its weird placement.
Well, this is what the rule has always been, though.
Yeah.
It's whoever's in charge of the franchise, that individual determines what's canon, what's not. And Roddenberry has come out and said that it's not. I would have no issue if J.J. Abrams or Brian Fuller, I'm not really sure what Brian Fuller's relationship with the franchise is right now after he stepped away as showrunner from Discovery, but if one of those two gentlemen came out and said it is canon, then I'd accept it. But if some intern at StarTrek.com announces it's canon, that doesn't do it for me.
Right, and actually I was surprised reading up how there was quite a few references to the animated series in DS9.
Okay, that I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
How would I know that? Because
exactly.
I've only seen a handful of episodes of the animated series. Mm-hmm. So what we're getting at, though, is like this is all part of the Tribble Trilogy, in which these species, they are explored. They're quite an iconic species as well.
Yes, and explored with more depth than you'd really expect for a soft furball.
That really can't say much beyond...
Yes. That's like your new party trick now.
Yes, like it's my Cardassian neck trick.
That's right, yeah. Exactly. So let's talk
my triple trick. Tyler's triple trick.
Let's talk about the trouble with tribbles. This is, of course, a season 2 episode where Kirk has a really crappy assignment to escort Green and runs afoul of some Klingons, and these little furry creatures that like to breed like crazy get involved.
To me, like, as a kid, I was not very familiar with the animated series, or with the original series, but the trouble with tribbles was absolutely one that was just etched into my memory. Like, just that shot, I can always remember of Kirk opening up the crate and all of those tribbles just falling all over him.
Yeah, when I started the original series, there was only a handful of episodes I really knew as a non-fan. Like, Arena, obviously. You know, Kirk and the Gorn is pretty iconic. But the tribbles was right up there. You know, when I was going through episodes, most of them didn't mean much to me.
Yeah.
You know, even though, like, Corporal McManeuver, Baylock is so iconic, but I didn't really know it. Whereas Tribbles was one I was counting down to because that was one that I knew that was a very important episode. Do you think that the success of this episode and why it's as loved, I know it's like an ongoing joke, I think, on Big Bang Theory. I don't watch the show. We need Ben Young here to confirm that one. But I know I got my mama's shirt in Las Vegas, when I went to the con the first year, and it was there was a vendor that was selling kind of all tribal merchandise, and he had a shirt that had song lyrics with the word tribal in it, and I got it for my mom, and she referenced Big Bang Theory and said that's what it's from.
Oh, okay.
And then I got my sister a tribal, that was her request, like she wanted a tribal.
Yeah.
So these are two people that don't watch Star Trek, but tribals, they have an actual affection for them.
And I think it's just because, A, they're iconic, and then B, I think the reason they are iconic is because they're kind of cute looking.
Right.
Is it just as easy as that?
Is it sort of the 23rd century equivalent of, like, cat memes?
Yeah. Or, like, keyboard cat?
ICANN has cheeseburger?
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah, is that, that's basically it?
Okay. So, obviously, you know, look, people love them, and I think it was genius. We can go into more depth a little bit, but I think it was genius on the part of the Deep Space Nine writers to seize upon just how iconic that episode is. Because, Cam, as an individual episode of the original series, what do you think is the most iconic one among mainstream audiences?
To me, it comes down to Kirk versus the Gorn.
Yeah.
And the Tribbles. That shot especially of, like, Kirk in the Mountain of Tribbles.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say those two things are what people will think of.
I would say so as well. So I think, look, an episode like, you know, The Trouble with Tribbles, it's a fun one to watch. And, you know, we've talked about it before, but I mean, for whatever reason, look, and I wonder what happened in the intervening years that made it so iconic, though, because these were airing in reruns for decades, and for whatever reason, this one just stuck around in people's minds.
Yeah.
You think it was because it was just such a lighthearted episode? Do you think there's an episode that's more lighthearted than this?
The original series? A Piece of the Action
okay.
is up there. I don't think it's as good as Tribbles. And I think one of its big strengths, to prep for this episode, I watched the episode with the commentary from David Gerrold, who wrote the episode.
Oh, okay.
And he talks a lot about his process for making this episode. He watched the first episode, I guess it would have been The Man Trap, when it aired, and was obsessed with Star Trek right out of the gate. He was a big sci-fi guy and wrote the episode. And he called it A Fuzzy Thing Happened to Me. Okay. And he pitched it for season one, but they were full. Like, they had their season all figured out. But they said, hey, you should come... Gene Kuhn, I believe, said, hey, you should come back and pitch for season two. They decided to run with it. David Gerrold was like a first-year college student.
Yeah.
And, you know, got on set and was writing the episode. And he said what was really, really important to him, and I think this is a reason why this episode works and is as popular as it is, and it's not something people ever point out. He said he was a huge fan of the show. He wanted everyone on the crew to be doing something. And you have every crew member has a lot to do. This is one of the few episodes where Chekhov and Scotty talk to one another.
And you know, I think if I was ever going to pitch like an episode or something, I would have that same instinct, you know, to give everybody something to do, because it makes the world feel more real.
Yes.
You know, like seeing kind of behind the scenes, oh, you know, everybody has like a function or duty, and that life goes on even if they're beyond the, you know, eyesight of, say, Kirk.
Yes. And David Gerald said, like, when he was on set, he would steal scripts from the episodes that were filming just before his and read them and try and figure out the language of each character.
Oh, okay.
And so he's someone who's really tackled this from a fan point of view, which, let's be honest, I don't think really anyone else was doing for the original series.
Yeah.
Very few. There might have been the odd one. But especially maybe when you get to season 3 and you get some of those episodes being sent in, but...
Well, when you hear all the stories about Ron Moore, do you think he's like the TNG equivalent of David Gerald as kind of the fan who gets to go and start writing for the series?
Probably. Yeah. And so I think that is a huge reason this episode works is not only does it give each of its characters something to do, and David Gerald really mourns on the commentary that George Takei was off shooting the Green Berets with John Wayne and couldn't be in the episode because he really would have loved to have used Sulu too.
Right.
Interestingly, he didn't use Spock that much, and he said Nimoy will never hold this episode, or never held up this episode as one of the best Star Trek episodes.
Someone's bitter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but he said he really underplayed Spock, which was one of his really only regrets with the episode.
Okay.
But one of the things that I really appreciated listening to his commentary was, it's such a minor thing, but he would really seize on little bits of information from the series Bible, and be like, well, hey, well, I've never seen that paid off in the series. Like, there's a whole bit in this episode about Scotty just wanting to hang out in his room and read technical manuals. And that was from the Bible that Scotty just, you know, only loves his technical manuals.
Yeah.
He said, well, this has never been acknowledged, so let's wrap that into the canon of the show.
Well, doesn't that sound like something a fan would do?
Yes.
And
but in the best way, because how often do we dismiss stuff as like just like fan wank scripts?
Oh, I know.
And this is a case of it done really, really well.
Well, and then, you know, I think we can jump from episode to episode, and we can also talk about broader themes, but, you know, further on, just before we wrap up discussion on this one and move on to...
I think there's a few other things to talk about with this one, but yeah.
Continue on with your thoughts there. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say, too, like, with the character of Cyrano Jones is a character I wanted to talk about, because you and I talked about Harry Mudd, and we had some issues with him.
Yes, he's a sex trafficker.
Now, Cyrano Jones, played by Stanley Adams. Why do you think he never came back?
I have no idea. I think you maybe my assumption would have been, you know, back in the day, writers just weren't all that obsessed with continuity.
Mm-hmm.
But he did come back in More Trouble, More Tribbles.
Sure, and he also, apparently, which I had never realized, Stanley Adams wrote an episode of the original series.
Oh, I did not know
that. He wrote The Mark of Gideon from season 3.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and, you know, who knew? But I think one of the brilliant things that I really noted watching this episode is the comic timing of The Trouble with Tribbles is absolutely brilliant. We had joked in the past about the fist fight that goes on for 15 minutes.
Yes. A typical TOS fist fight.
But I noticed this time it's really not that long. It's long in terms of time length because it's cutting between all this comedy with Cyrano Jones and the bartender, and there's some really good like long play comedy.
Well, think about the length of the fight in this episode versus how long that fight lasts in Trials and Tribulations.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it really goes to show like just kind of the difference in how TV was filmed and edited, you know, 50 years ago versus nowadays.
Right.
You know, nowadays, if that episode took place with John Archer, he'd get one punch in the face, he'd get knocked down, and then the episode would go on.
Yes, yes. But, you know, there's a whole sequence with Cyrano Jones trying to, like, get free drinks out of the bartender, and it's the most like kind of underplayed joke. Like no one's calling attention to it. Characters aren't like, "What is he doing?" And it's just all silent comedy going on. Like you could tell they had really great comedic actors here, and the fact that you know when he goes up and he's trying to give the bartender a tribble for a drink, and the bartender starts pulling out tribbles, and that is like the scene like the rake with Sideshow Bob
right
in Simpsons, where it just keeps going and going and going to a point where you're like, "Wow, is this ever going to stop?" So, yeah, I mean, Stanley Adams, just invaluable to this episode. It was very intriguing to me they wanted Boris Karloff for the role.
Really?
Yeah, not exactly the choice that I would have gone with, but
yeah,
shows that casting is sometimes made in the room. You just find the right actor. But I think it's interesting because we've never really tackled this episode from this point of view, talking about the characters. Because this is an episode that introduces a lot of characters, and they all pretty much hit.
Yeah. Like, even the Klingons in this, like, they are distinct.
Yes.
Well, I love the fact that they'll just come in and start, like, bagging on, like, the bucket of rust, yeah. You know, that they call the Enterprise. And
I love the idea of the Klingons, you know, when they're out in deep space, they're kind of enemies of the Federation. But when they're hanging out in a bar, they're just like, you're a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, the bitterness is kind of more just, like, surly.
Well, okay. I mean, obviously the Klingons are supposed to represent the Soviet Union at the time.
Mm-hmm.
What would be, like, the equivalent of a space station K-7, like, back in the 1960s on Earth? Would it be, I don't know, West Berlin or something?
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe that works.
I'm just wondering about, like, a kind of a neutral territory where
yes.
A bar fight could break out between, you know, soldiers from either side of the Iron Curtain.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think of the character of Koloff?
I think he works here, and I no wonder why they brought him back to do more Troubles, More Tribbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Koloff is a really brilliant creation for the original series, because I think most of the Klingons on the show, with the exception of Michael and Sarah and Day of the Dub, were really just kind of skeezy, and not, I'm not going to say that Michael and Sarah's character, Kang, is likable, but there's a lot of depth to him, whereas the other ones, there's not depth. I don't think there's depth to Koloff, but I think it's really interesting that Trouble with Tribbles presents a Klingon that's likable.
Well, you can understand that, I think he was trying to be depicted as, look, Starfleet has their Kirk.
Yes.
Klingons would have their own version of Kirk, who is
right.
essentially Koloff. You know, maybe it's no coincidence that his name starts with a K as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. That seemed to be a trend for the original series.
Yes. But I do like the way that it's all depicted here.
One thing I want to talk about was actually the use of the Tribbles in The Trouble with Tribbles.
Okay.
You ask random, you know, non-fan on the street about this episode, they're like, yeah, that's the one with the Tribbles. The Tribbles are not actually the plot of this episode.
No,
I think that's something we're going to see going forward through this trilogy, is that the Tribbles are never what the story is about.
They're very ancillary to what's really actually happening. They're more like a decoration.
They're a complication.
Yeah.
They present a problem, in this case, yes, grain. And a great slow-burn comedy performance from William Shatner, getting increasingly more and more irritated over the course of the episode. And ultimately, the Tribbles just add into that anger. And I love how they're used, of just like a complication just to make Kirk's day worse. And I think that's why this episode works so well. Apparently, like, David Gerald was really nervous about showing it to Shatner, because he wasn't sure if, you know, Shatner, he really loved Shatner as an actor, and he was very nervous that he would look at him and be like, you know, like, I'm a dramatic actor. I don't know about this. Because there hadn't been an episode like this in the original series yet. This was kind of their comedy breakthrough episode.
Yeah. I mean, there has been a lot of moments of comedy within the series.
Sure.
Up to that point.
But not a straightforward, sort of goofy episode.
Yeah.
And he was very nervous. And Shatner loved it. Like, really went over the moon. And it was his idea, really, to play it as, like, a slow burn.
Well, I think you can tell when Shatner does commit
yeah.
to a role, like, he really does, you can tell he's given it his all.
Right.
Much
yeah.
like Scotty does with the Enterprise. Yeah.
And yeah, and Gerald said he was really nervous about the whole shot of the famous shot of all the Tribbles falling on Kirk.
Yeah.
He really thought Shatner would be like, I'm not doing that. Well, lo and behold, he did it, and history was made.
And it lives on in all time immemorial.
So I think we can agree the Trouble with Tribbles, great episode, all-timer for the original series. I think this was my Desert Island pick. Or is it yours?
May have been.
No, mine was a Mock Time. Yours was, I think, Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah, because we had to pick one from each series.
Yeah. So, how many times have you watched this episode?
I would say at least 3 times.
Okay.
So it's a fun one, though. It's hard to get sick of it.
Right, yeah. It's one that I've watched a number of times, and it's what I love about it is actually it's not really a very simple story. Like, there's some depth to it. You have, you know, Arne Darvin.
Yeah.
You know, you have reveals to it. You have, I love Niles Barris. Such a jerk. You know, there's all these little moments in it. It's not one story with, like, one villain. There's a lot of layers and a lot of fun to be had to like warrant revisiting in a way that a lot of episodes don't, of not just original series, but all Trek.
Yeah.
So I think that's what makes it great and why it's so loved all these years later. Tyler, is that also the case with More Troubles, More Tribbles?
Well, so one of the things I had to get my mind around, and I may have been unfair to the animated series in prior podcasts, but...
You had only previous to this seen the one episode, right?
The Counterclock incident.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did make fun of that one. You chose it as one of your hidden gems, and I ended up derisively referring to it as a hidden gem of comedy.
Right.
But look, what I just got my head around for this viewing is, like, this is a kid's show. It's meant for children. Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, I can appreciate it as kind of a fun story. I like the idea of, like, fat tribbles, you know, the ones that don't keep multiplying. They just keep getting bigger and bigger as they eat everything.
Yeah.
And so that's still a problem in and of itself. So I honestly, look, if this was a live action episode,
right,
it was broader than, say, The Trouble with Tribbles, but it was still, like, a fun follow-up to it.
Yeah, once you introduce, like, the Glommers, which are, like, these tribble-eating predators, that is gets goofier. Like, that's more cartoonish.
Well, see, I thought the silliest thing was, like, that Klingon immobilization beam where...
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's the plot of the episode, really. Once again, the tribbles are... not really the central point of the episode.
Well, the thing is, Spock reveals that not only does it immobilize the ship that it's attacking, but it immobilizes the Klingon ship itself.
Yes.
You know, for those who haven't watched it, the Klingons, they arrive, they shoot the Enterprise with this immobilization beam, and then they find out later that the beam has the same effect on the Klingon ship that's actually using the beam. So
right.
It's kind of the dumbest weapon ever. And they acknowledge that by the end of the series and be like, yeah, that's a stupid weapon. No one's ever going to use it again.
Well, you know, the Klingons thought they had a good idea.
Yeah.
Give them props for trying, I suppose.
I'll give them a participation medal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, I thought this was a fun episode with Return of Cyrano Jones. You can tell Kirk does not care for this guy at all.
Who do you think Kirk likes more, him or Harry Mudd?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would say Harry Mudd.
You think so?
Because he was exasperated in The Trouble with Tribbles.
Right.
And so, for a number of factors, not only just Cyrano Jones, but by this time that we catch up with him in the animated series, Kirk's like telling Koloff, look, I really wish I could give up this Federation citizen. Believe me, nothing would make me happier. Believe me, I want to give him up, but I am legally obligated to protect his safety. If it's up to me, please, Koloff, don't get me wrong. You know, I thought that was funny. And this is coming... I've complained before that, you know, William Shatner kind of phones in his performance in the animated series.
Yeah.
But for here, there's at least two or three moments where Shatner goes for it once again.
There was one I totally burst out laughing. Which is when there's the giant tribble on his chair, and they don't reveal it right away, and then it like kind of pans. Let's be honest, filmation doesn't pan.
No.
It's like just a different awkward cut, but it shows the giant tribble in the chair, and Kirk just goes like, "I'll stand," and it's the most like hilarious flat like line reading.
Yeah,
like you could tell that Shatner realized what worked about the Trouble with Tribbles. Like, what type of Kirk performance works well in that type of episode? And you can see he's going for it again here. And again, this is David Gerrold writing the episode.
Yeah, and was it Jimmy Doohan doing the voice of Koloff this
time? It was,
yeah. Yeah, I thought I recognized it.
I wish they'd had William Campbell come in and do it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately with the animated series, all too often they just brought in guest actors to do it. They had the same actor doing Cyrano Jones.
Okay.
But for the most part, like, you might be able to afford maybe one guest star.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, okay, with that in mind, so here's the thing. I've made fun of the animated series in the past, but I found it charming enough that when Netflix got to the end credits and then it automatically reloaded the next episode, I ended up watching the next one all the way through as well.
Which is the next one?
It's with that guy named something Weston.
Oh, yeah, with the mustache.
Yeah, he's supposed to be dead.
It's called The Survivor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that one because it reveals, you know, like this alien wanted to have a purpose in life, so it became a Romulan spy that could impersonate other people.
Yes.
I found that a very Star Trek kind of story, and so there's a certain charm to the animated series.
This
that
is a shattering breakthrough for some space transmissions.
You know what? I'll say this about doing the podcast. When I first started it, I was not a fan of Enterprise, and I've since come around on seasons 3 and 4, which I think are fantastic, and I'm starting to come around on the animated series now, Cam.
Oh, so. My Lord. What next?
I don't know.
Well, there was one thing I really wanted to talk about with this animated episode, the Tribble episode, is that originally David Gerald pitched this for season 3 of the original series.
Okay.
And there was some, you know, I think there was some enthusiasm for doing another Tribble episode. And Fred Freiberger shot it down. He didn't like Tribbles.
Well, but it's not like he had, like, that great of a reputation as a fantastic showrunner for season 3 of TOS.
Do you think this would have worked?
I did not know that. And do you remember just a few moments ago I said that I could buy this as like a live action episode. Like it'd be a fun follow up.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's some other stuff. I like the setting of Space Station K7, and I think it works to good effect in the next episode, Trials and Tribulations as well.
Yep.
Sad to have lost it. What did you think of those robot ships featured in this one? Not the ships themselves. The fact that every single crew member has to keep talking about the robot ships. The robot ships.
Yeah, I kind of cracked up because it made me think of Prototype, the Voyager episode, which I really like. But when they're like, "We've entered a robot war."
Yeah.
Whenever you say robots, it's inherently funny.
It sounds like something from like the 1950s.
It does. I mean, I guess you can get away with it in a Tribble episode.
Yeah.
If you have Balance of Terror and they're like, "Where are the robot ships?" Then I'd be like, "Oh, this is jarring."
Yeah.
I thought it worked in this episode. I did laugh at the part though where they're having the robot ships ram the the Klingon ship.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's a very, not a very effective strategy.
Well, what are your thoughts, though? Because you've asked me what I thought about this animated episode, but I mean, do you think it works as a good follow-up to the first Tribble episode?
I think it's a really fun episode. I don't think it matches the Tribble, the original Trouble with Tribbles, because I just think that one, purely on a writing and performance standpoint, is so, you know, I mean, I love the original series. There's not a lot of episodes that stand up. There may be episodes I like more than that, but in across the board direction, acting, writing, that stand up to the level of quality that the Trouble with Tribbles.
Well, the thing about like who had stuff to do in this animated episode, Kirk, Koloff, Cyrano Jones, and then maybe a lesser degree McCoy.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, we don't have the dynamism that was going on in the original Tribble episode.
I thought it was actually a bit of a lost opportunity to not give Uhura more to do. Because one of the great joys of the original series episode is Uhura kind of fawning over the Tribbles. Like, she's the one that first falls in love with them and kind of brings them into the, you know, into the ship.
This episode, though, she literally just said, incoming transmission.
Yeah.
Like, that was the extent of her contribution, which was disappointing.
Yeah, I thought so too. I'm curious. Now, David Gerald said originally the plot was going to be about a different like strain of essentially Tribbles. Like a different strain that were vicious and man-eating.
Oh, okay.
And they were going to eat crew members.
Oh, that now, sounds fun.
Yeah, like, do you think that would have worked?
For live action, but for a children's TV show, I don't think so.
Would this be a little too close to the Killer Tomatoes?
It probably would have gone down in history as the Killer Tomatoes episode.
Yeah.
I would have been up for it, though. It sounds... Because here's... Okay, you know, if we want to discuss maybe why the Tribbles work, it's because they kind of subvert your expectations. They are these adorable little species that can have, like, supreme ecological damage to a planet. You know, they're much
that's,
like...
That's kind of the thread of this actual story, is that Klingons are after Cyrano Jones for ecological terrorism or something.
Yeah, and look, it's happens here on Earth. The Australians, the New Zealanders, they're very, very obsessed with quarantine in their countries.
Yeah.
Because a lot of invasive species brought over from other continents have really torn apart the ecology there.
I even think that might have... I seem to recall hearing that might have been a bit of an inspiration for the original Tribbles. There had been an issue in Australia.
Yeah.
But there was, like, the cane toads, I remember from my lifetime, was a big deal.
So I think the reason why the Tribbles work is because they kind of subvert your expectations. You know, they're adorable, but they can have some bad side effects. If they subvert your expectations once more, in which they become man-eating, vicious, entities, that, right. that still works for it. You know, you're still doing something new and original. So I would have been down for some Killer Tomato Tribbles.
What I think also really works about them is that we have seen Kurt go up against unstoppable forces in the galaxy, you know, and triumph. You know, he took down the Gorn. He made, you know, a shotgun out of, like, you know, bamboo and powder, essentially. He can't beat the Tribbles.
No one can.
Yes, and that's the genius.
Yeah. And the best you can hope for is to transport them onto a Klingon ship, right?
Well, yes, exactly. So why don't we move into the DS9 episode, which is having its big anniversary, and that is Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, you know, I actually, as a young person, I think I actually saw this...
A young person? That's such an old person thing to say.
I know. But Cam, honestly...
You're like Robert April right now.
I literally watched this episode for the first time 20 years ago.
Okay, so what is 10, 11? 11, 12?
I would have been 12.
12. What is 12-year-old Tyler thinking, experiencing when he watches this episode?
Well, I had actually had not seen The Trouble with Tribbles yet, so this is my introduction to the Tribbles, in fact. And, you know, of course, as I mentioned before, I was very familiar with them from pop culture, and just that iconic scene of them all barreling down on Kirk as he opens that compartment.
Right.
You know, and so I thought this was just, like, somebody who was not a fan of the original series at the time, I thought this is an incredibly well-done episode, very fun. Deep Space Nine, it's known as a dark series, but when they do light episodes like this, or Take Me Out to the Holosuite, You Are Cordially Invited, they really do hit it out of the ballpark here. And this is no exception to that rule. Just think about the production that went into this, just special effects. And we brought this up, the last time that we spoke about this episode, I thought the plot to The Trouble with Tribbles was entirely different based on watching this particular episode.
Yes, I know, because a lazier show would have followed the exact same plot and just had characters kind of duck their heads into famous scenes.
Yes.
And it would have kind of ended like the way we all know it did. Almost like the Back to the Future 2 kind of idea.
Yeah.
Where you still got to go through the dance, you know, and have them, you know, Marty running around in the background, future Marty or whatever. This does not do that. Like, they... You know, God bless Moore and Echeverria for, you know, not only doing a tribute episode, but saying, how do we write a story that's every bit as entertaining as the original?
Well, this episode stands on itself for its own comedic beats, its own contribution to the plot. Look, just the fact about Julian Bashir is debating whether to potentially sleep with his grandmother. You know, like, that's comedy right there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if Star Trek, the original series, never even existed, and they just did an episode like this with these random people named Kirk or Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I this would have still been, like, a very fun episode. Like, to me, it worked for me having never seen the original episode.
Yeah.
My first time.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, going back and rewatching this one, it is funny because it actually takes a little while to get to, you know, Space Station K-7.
Right.
You're spending a lot of time with the temporal investigators.
Right.
But, I don't know, by golly, once you get there, it totally works.
And like the original Trouble with Tribbles, it gives the cast a lot to do.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen more Nana Visitor. I think Kira in there would have been really fun.
Quark.
Yeah. I mean, we get that great shot at the end of Quark.
Yeah.
But what we do get of the cast, like, everyone is having a ball. We're seeing combinations
a
hanging out.
A ball of Tribbles.
Ball of Tribbles, yeah. We're seeing, like, some cast members hang out. We don't see a lot. Like, Odo and Worf are together a lot.
Yeah.
Which, there's not a lot of episodes where they're palling around.
Well, I don't think they ever really cared for each other. And I think Odo is completely in the right to tell Worf to screw off when Worf was trying to do the job as security, chief of security on board the station when he first arrived. And after that, there really wasn't... I'm kind of surprised because they were two very much outsider characters and they never really... ever connected.
No.
So, but this, look, they're sitting around, Odo's admiring the Tribbles, and Worf thinks that they're disgrace, and he's happy to recount the Klingons destroying their home world. And everybody just being horrified at Worf. Like, that was great.
What do you make of the Klingon-Tribble feud?
Well, okay, that's worth discussing here, because I think it goes back to why I think the Tribbles work, though. It's subverting expectations. Klingons are these warrior species here, and you've got like this very innocuous, well, apparently innocuous species that is just adorable, and for whatever reason, they can just make life hell for the Klingons, though.
Right.
And look, maybe you say, what's the deal with Klingons and Tribbles? What if there's an alien species that found tarantulas just adorable, Cam? Absolutely adorable. I don't think too many humans are huge fans of tarantulas. They have some fans here on Earth, but not too many want to dive into a big like compartment full of them and dig around.
Right, yes. How deep do you think the mythology of Tribbles goes with the Klingon people?
Well, okay, so I have to believe that it would have started within 200 years because they're not a species that were native to Kronos.
Right.
So, Klingons, they're off conquering other planets. They land... Here's how I imagine. They land on this Tribble homeworld, or else they encounter a species that already brought on Tribbles, and somehow it gets stuck on a Klingon ship, gets onto another Klingon ship, and it just proliferates, and they can't operate their ships. They're having a horrible time. They realize that it's the bane of their existence. They have to go back to the home world and just obliterate them.
Yes. It's sort of an unspoken dark side of the Tribbles episodes where you know those Klingons are just, like, massacring those things.
Like, stomping on them.
Yeah, like, it's ugly.
Yeah.
Like, they are not, like, dealing with them humanely.
Well, they're jettisoning them into space or else they're pouring, like, gasoline on them and lighting the match. I don't know. I'm just picturing the sounds of the...
Yeah, I've always found that kind of amusing, because the episodes always end with, like, waka waka waka, those Klingons and their Tribbles. And then I just, like, pictured the bloodbath, and I'm like, oh, boy.
Well, I still praise the writers of Deep Space Nine for going there by literally putting a bomb inside a Tribble and, like, blowing it up outside space, you know? Just, I wish there was, like, some depiction of guts. That would have been funny, but...
I loved how they tied that together, too, with Sisko and looking for the bomb... And then going up in that grain container and then throwing them down on top of Kurt.
Like, or even just that one aberrant one that I think Jadzia chucks and then it's just the one that ends up spilling out onto Kirk at the very end.
Yes.
You know, like to me, I just love, you can tell how much the writers care about doing this episode right.
How many times do you think they sat and watched The Trouble with Tribbles to look for in-jokes and ways to tie it together?
I have to believe when it comes to like writing an episode, they probably spent, I would guess... it's tough to say if they spent like double the amount of time because I think the entire strategy here is no matter what, you have to crank this episode out ASAP.
Did they have a longer shooting schedule for this one? Do you know?
I believe they did.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it was, I think typically Deep Space Nine episodes, it would take 7 to 10 days to shoot. And this one, maybe a listener's going to kill me for saying this. I think this one was maybe around 12 days.
Okay.
So there was a lot,
and had a bigger budget too.
Yeah, well, it did, but the thing is, like, they still had like their same budget for the entire season.
Right.
It's mostly them just having to do a lot of bottle episodes, to make up for what this cost, and I think it's worth it.
This was for the 30th anniversary, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Do you know? I'm just curious. Was it a similar budget for this as for Flashback, the Voyager episode with Sulu?
Well, no,
not
even close. Because, I mean, what? There's no real interesting special effects in Flashback. It's just like, let's hire some old background actors who appeared in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and we'll get George Takei. I don't think George Takei is commanding the same kind of price tag as all those digital effects, like inserting the Deep Space Nine cast into... a 30-year-old episode.
And it's funny, Walter Koenig actually came to the set to sort of, he taught like Cole Meany and Sidi Galfadel sort of how to act in sort of an original series type of atmosphere.
Oh, okay.
And he was telling them, it was kind of a joke on set, he made more money ultimately, well, I guess he wasn't saying on set, he said it later down the road, but he made more money from this episode having his likeness used for on Deep Space Nine than he did for being paid for the original series episode.
I can believe it.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's funny to me that this was not the original plan. Like, it's well documented that they talked about doing a piece of the action with Star Trek nerds, essentially.
I kind of hope that they might return to that idea one of these days. I'm kind of in love with that kind of meta-fan commentary idea.
They were toying with that a little bit in that episode, The Communicator of Enterprise.
Yeah.
They didn't go all the way, obviously, but do you think that was inspired by that pitch idea?
No, because I think it's entirely different writing crews.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't any Deep Space Nine writers involved with Enterprise, as far as I recall. So.
Right. Now, we look back at this episode, though, as being, I think, the best of the 30th anniversary episodes.
stiff competition.
I like Flashback, but yeah.
I hate that episode.
However, originally, Ira Stephen Bear, aside from a piece of the action, was really thinking about bringing back Charlie X.
Really?
Yes.
Like an old man Charlie X?
Yes.
Okay.
Because he knew Robert Walker, the actor who played Charlie X, was still around. And he was seriously considering making that the 30th anniversary episode.
I just wish I could have seen Sisko do the Charlie X face.
Can you imagine? What is a 30th anniversary Charlie X episode?
It's him making his dumb Charlie X face and changing things aboard the station, I guess? I don't know.
At how old? Like 50?
Well, the actor would have been, 50.
Probably 50. Like,
so he would have been stuck in time, or it would have been another time travel episode? It doesn't sound very pretty, but it's all in the execution.
Yes.
But the pitch here, the idea for this Tribble episode, far better than, I think, the pitch for a Charlie X episode. Mm. I think the pitch for a piece of the action follow-up is much stronger than a return to what no one's been begging for, but a return of Charlie X.
Yes, I don't think anyone... Do you think they'll ever bring Charlie X back in any way, shape, or form? I know they did in of Gods and Men.
Well, if they
a real one.
If they do in Discovery, Charlie would be, what, like 8 years old?
Yeah, well, he's not discovered yet, so you can't do it.
It'd be great if the 30th anniversary was dedicated to teaching Charlie how to womanize even better now that he's a middle-aged man.
That would be really unsettling.
Yeah.
Really unsettling.
Who would have been doing it? Do you think Quark would have been teaching Charlie X the ways of a woman?
That makes the most sense.
Yeah.
I think it would have been Quark.
That could have been amusing.
It could have been. I just wonder how... I don't know. How do you think that episode goes over with the average DS9 fan? Like, do you think Charlie X is in any way iconic to them?
No. And I think they made the right decision, as I said at the very beginning of the episode here.
There was a joke in this episode that is so great where they mistake Kirk for this guy who looked, in the gold uniform. I didn't realize that actor, his name is Paul Baxley, was actually Shatner's stunt double.
So that joke works on so many different levels.
Yeah, it's like a meta joke.
But I just love that joke on so many levels because they're like, hey, I think it's O'Brien who's like, hey, that's him. That's Kirk. And I think Bashir's like, why is he wearing Lieutenant Bars on his sleeves then?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, don't worry about that.
It's
just like, great joke there.
It's a great joke, and I love that, with both this and the original Tribbles episode, there's a lot of depth to it. Like, it's not just like, let's just make a goofy episode. It's like, we're going to make a really smart, goofy episode.
So, Cam, let me ask you this. We go to 2150. It's the era of Star Trek Discovery, if that series ever makes it to air. It's not as funny as I maybe would hope. Right. But would you want to see some sort of follow-up episode to the Tribbles?
I'm not against it, but I think if you're going to do a Tribble episode... It has to be good.
I think...
Like, you've got to workshop that idea. You got to have something solid. You can't just be like, hey, guys, what about, fitting in a Tribbles episode this week?
Like, if Trials and Tribulations was forgettable, then I think there'd be less pressure on the Discovery writers to do so.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do wonder about, and we'll have to wait and see, is that Brian Fuller said that they have a season-long arc planned over the course of 13 episodes.
Yeah.
So I do wonder how often they're going to get the chance to genre swap from week to week, and if they're going to even have, if it's going to totally make sense to do a real lighthearted comedy episode in the midst of this season-long arc.
Yeah, that's the concern. I mean, to me, Tribbles episodes work really beautifully in episodic television.
Yeah.
My concern is that they're going to feel pressure to use the tribbles because they're iconic, and they're going to throw them into just a serialized narrative that has a specific tone, and it's not going to be the right tone for a tribbles. Like, I don't want to see just tribbles thrown into a story because they're popular.
Yeah.
You know, the same way I would feel about really any iconic thing from any Star Trek show, really. I don't want them to force something in just because it's popular.
But it unlike, say, the Borg, as we discussed last week, who we have no interest in revisiting, I would say I do have interest in revisiting Tribbles, you know.
Yeah, because I would have said maybe, you know, after the original series, like, that was best as a one-off. But then, you know, when you get to Trials and Tribulations, you get to see how Tribbles impact that cast. And how much fun you can have with the character dynamics, having Worf there, Odo, all that. Jadzia is like a delight. I love Terry Farrell's performance in this episode.
Yeah.
Just to be like fangirling out the whole episode. Yeah.
Her calling Spock hot.
Yes.
That spoke to a lot of people out there who always found Spock more attractive than Kirk as well.
A former professor of ours.
That's true, yes.
Yeah. If you're going to use the Tribbles as a vehicle for exposing the lighter side of your cast, I'm down for it, because I always think that's really fun. Like, I used to love when X-Files did comedic episodes and we got to see Mulder and Scully be funny. It's something you don't earn, I don't think, in season one.
Yeah.
Maybe not even two. I mean, original series did it in two, but I feel like, you know, the audience has to really be on board, like, really love the characters before you can do that type of episode.
Are you surprised that, other than Star Trek Into Darkness, which had the mention of the Tribbles and the infamous Tribble blood.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. Well, are you surprised that beyond that, we didn't really get any Tribble references from any of the other series?
There are cameos of Tribbles in Star Trek III, Generations, and also in the 2009 movie. They're just kind of like set dressing. There's like a Tribble on a shelf or... Yeah. I think it's the 2009 one. It's on that station that Scotty, the outpost. There's a scene where, like, Keenster's kind of walking away on the left side with his back to the camera, and you can look right to the right, there's a tribble in a cage. And it's fairly prominent, but it's not the sort of thing you're going to immediately look at.
I've never noticed any of these cameos at this point. But I'm just surprised that we just never got any references to them. I'm sure Picard has had to give a speech on, the value of ecology before.
Right.
Why not just make a tribble reference there?
Was that a missed opportunity? Picard with tribbles.
Oh, that would have been good.
Isn't that good? Like, I think that really could have been something special.
But I absolutely agree, but I can't imagine Michael Piller giving the okay to that, though. It just seems to kind of go against what they would do on that series. And I think there's this idea that they just really did not want to elicit all these comparisons with the original series. And
do you think the Next Generation had the right tone for the type of comedy that works for the Tribble episodes?
I think so. I think it would have been possible. I just think about an episode like, say, Cupid.
Right.
It's like mother effing Robin Hood.
Right.
Would you have ever supposed that Robin Hood, like, would work on Next Generation?
Right.
They made it happen.
Right.
So.
Yeah, yeah. It's too bad. I'm curious, what did you think of the Tribble in Into Darkness? Because, I mean, it's fairly prominent.
I'm more hung up on the stupidity of that plot point with the Tribble blood that brings people back from the dead.
Yeah.
It therefore eliminating McCoy's job.
Yeah.
And every single job of every doctor in the entire galaxy.
That was a perfect case of what I was arguing against, though, is forcing the Tribbles into a narrative that doesn't support them.
Yes,
because Into Darkness is not a light, fun movie.
No.
So it's really weird that suddenly you've got McCoy doing, like, experiments on a Tribble.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Fan service.
Yeah.
And we've delved into fan service in a previous episode. Mm-hmm. This is not a good example of fan service here. This is the bad fan service. Whereas Trials and Tribulations, that's the good fan service. It makes me go...
Do you think Tribbles could ever work in a movie?
A movie centered on Tribbles?
Well, I mean, the stories never center on Tribbles.
Right, okay. But, like, featured as prominently as they are.
Right.
A movie. Maybe in a different era. Maybe in, like, the 1980s era of Star Trek. films.
You don't want to see Chris Hemsworth covered in tribbles?
No. I would love to see him, like, draped only in tribbles. But I don't know if it's going to happen. Yeah. He just has to carry, like, one large one in front of him at all times, and that's all he's got on. I'm down for that.
I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the Tribble episodes. You know, how do you feel about the animated one? Do you feel it stands up against the other two? Which do you prefer, the DS9 take or Troubled Tribbles? I'd be curious to hear people come down on either side. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Well, we are going to be examining what happens when technology goes awry in Star Trek. It's a plot point. We kind of investigated this with transporter malfunctions, but I think we're going to take a wider view of everything because there's some good episodes and some not so great examples that we can examine here.
Good. This will be fun, I think.
I think so. We'll have a special guest on the show, just confirming, but it's somebody who's been on before, and we're happy to have this individual back.
I can't wait. So you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vicious Man Eating Tribbles Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in nude Chris Hemsworth holding a tribble in front of his body.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.